Today's broadcast is brought to you in part by Corporate Capital Direct. Listen, banks are not lending, and the online lenders may not tell you all you need to hear to make the right decision for your company needs. Get the inside edge for business financing. Whether you have capital needs for inventory, payroll, general operating expenses, or even to consolidate expensive debt or tax issues, Corporate Capital Direct can help you avoid common mistakes when seeking a capital solution for your business. Never upfront fees. Get the inside edge for your business financing needs. Call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com. Again, call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com.
Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence, and featuring Michael Santucci, co-chair of the Intellectual Property Division of the Broward Bar. From the law firm of Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast in the Journal of Criminal Law and Criminology, Northwestern University School of Law, is an article titled Crime Victims' Rights During the Criminal Investigations, Applying the Crime Victims' Rights Act Before Criminal Charges Are Filed, which was written by Paul Gazelle, Nathaniel Mitchell, and Bradley J. Edwards. The article addresses whether crime victims should have rights during criminal investigations using the Crime Victims' Rights Act, which is also CVRA, as the focal point of our discussion today. And today we're very pleased to have Brad Edwards, who's actually going to be on this Friday talking about negligent security and wrongful death. Brad Edwards is known for as a lead trial attorney for the Broward County State's Attorney Office, prosecuting many violent crimes. I'd like to first welcome our legal panel host. Good afternoon, Gary Singer.
How you doing, Phil?
Another day in paradise. And good afternoon, Gary Astro.
Good to be back, Phil. Thank you.
Gary, we're counting on you as a criminal attorney. And then filling in for Michael Santucci is Joe Priori.
Thanks, Phil. Good to be here.
Appreciate you taking the time. Hey, Joe. You know, let me quote from the article. In recent years, federal and state enactments have given crime victims extensive rights to participate in criminal cases. Many of these rights apply only after the filing of criminal charges, such as the victim's right to be heard during a court proceedings. A crime victim's right to deliver an impact statement at sentencing, for instance, can only be exercised after a prosecutor has filed charges against the defendant and obtained a conviction. Other rights, however, can apply even before the formal filing of charges. As one example, the Crime Victims' Right Act extends to federal crime victims the right to confer with prosecutors. But can victims exercise their right before charges have been filed? Good afternoon, Brad.
Good afternoon, Phil.
Well, Brad, okay, even if it's not, I want to jump in something we touched on before we went on the air. And from a criminal defense lawyer standpoint, I've tried a lot of cases where the state refers to the victim during trial. The defendant, my client's not convicted of anything. They're charged. Most of us don't forget the presumption of innocence or presumed innocence. Yet, during jury selection and throughout the trial, until and unless there's a conviction, that alleged victim is referred to as the victim throughout the trial. And what I would do is approach the court on what's called a motion in limine, and I think you and I have been in that circumstance precisely when you were in domestic violence, and I would ask the court to instruct the state not to be able to refer to the wife who was allegedly battered by my client as a victim during the trial, because that's certainly inconsistent with the, is it not inconsistent with the presumption of innocence, A and B? Does it not suggest that there's already a determination that she's a victim?
It's one waking up when he's done.
Wait, did you?
Sorry, were you still going?
I was trying to finish the question.
Are you sure?
Brad, what are your feelings about that on both issues?
Well, yeah, it depends on the circumstance, I think, and it also depends on the judge. I mean, listen, if the,
when is it ever right to refer to if somebody as a victim when there's no conviction, there's a presumption of innocence?
If somebody is found on the side of the road, beaten half to death, that person was a victim of something. So,
good point.
So referring to them as a victim,
he wins.
Okay. So referring to them as a victim of
something. Add one, Gary, zero.
Yeah. Your defense may be it wasn't me, or you know the guy I'm representing didn't do
it.
That's
not saying it's
that's
a victim
different.
Of your.
Well, what if
criminal?
My client has a potential self-defense argument? Then that the use of the term victim is there's a presumption that person's a victim when in fact that could be misleading and certainly contrary to what the Constitution says. Okay. In those circumstances, do you think it's meaningful? A and B. Do you think it's fair?
Well, one, I don't think it matters much. Just truthfully, I don't think it matters much. I've tried 100 cases. I tried many as a prosecutor. I've tried many more as a civil litigator. And I think that there were times where we put a lot of focus on this terminology and thought that jurors really care and they make up their mind based on whether somebody's called a perpetrator, somebody's called a victim or whatever. And I really don't think that they do that. They take everything into consideration. Is it fair? Again, it depends on the circumstances, but in some circumstances, probably not, and it's unnecessary. But you've got to call the person something.
True, but you would admit, let me just follow up with one thing, you would admit that it's contrary to the presumption when there's a one-on-one violent episode and my client's claiming self-defense or stand your ground.
Well, they can both
still
be
referring,
victims.
I haven't finished the question yet.
They can both be overruled. They can both be victims.
Okay,
the
so the defendant's a victim,
one.
Too.
Oh, I love seeing this prosecutor putting you in your place. Yeah. Great.
Well,
in
the court
is
of the
that
public,
what's happening? I didn't realize.
But the court of the public opinion, all of you been in the news. Gary, you write for the Sun Sentinel. Every Monday you see a smiley face.
I'm in the
face.
News literally every Monday.
I know. But with that said and done, maybe in the court of public opinion they say the alleged victim. Maybe that does make a difference.
Well, I think that they do, but I think Gary's
point
is... I
think that makes
is,
it worse.
But I think in the courtroom they don't.
More prejudice.
Let Brad finish his answer.
In the courtroom they don't, though. As a former prosecutor, the prosecutors typically refer to them as victims. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what...
Throughout the entire process, not once there's a sentencing, which is appropriate, not once there's a conviction, which is appropriate, from the very beginning, victim.
But the reality is, whether they say it or not, everybody in the courtroom knows who they've charged and who they haven't charged.
That's true.
So they know who the defendant is, who the other person is, and if you want to call the other person a victim, the jury's going to decide whether they're really the
true,
victim.
True, but I'm going to fight. I'm going to move for that motion in limine.
Of course,
I'm going to ask that court to refrain and
what do you call
the state.
And I have a serious question. What as a defense attorney, he's going
to
want
to my
call
motion
victim
is to instruct the state not to use the term victim.
I got you. What word
that's
are you
not my decision.
Use?
That's the state's decision.
No, but when you're up there talking about it,
what am I going to use?
What are you going to call
the accuser? How's
the
that?
Accuser.
How's that?
Well, because you're...
Didn't
you know
think
what?
I was going to come back.
But no, I did.
I said, how is that?
That was actually very good, which is what I was about to say, is because it also paints a picture that this isn't a victim. This is someone pointing the finger, you damn
in
accuser.
Fact, I like the accuser.
You're both using language to your benefit,
that
which is what
something.
You're supposed to do.
But the victim
and hopefully
term,
the trier of fact can sort it
but
out.
But the victim term is contrary to our constitutional right to the...
Getting back to this article. The article is titled Crime Victims' Rights During Criminal Investigations. Why did you write this?
It spawned out of a particular case. So I actually had a girl come to my office in 2008 really just telling me that she was... molested by a particular individual up in Palm Beach. I guess it's public information. His name's Jeffrey Epstein, and that he was.
Oh yeah.
And
I'm willing to name names, baby. I love it.
Well, it's a public case.
It is.
So
it's great.
And there's many other public cases. So she came to my office and said, "Look, you know what? I've been cooperating with the FBI. I've been cooperating with the U.S. Attorney's Office. I've been told that there's this federal investigation, but I'm not understanding what's happening, and I can't really get anybody to tell me what's happening." So I, as a former prosecutor, thought this is going to be easy. I'll just get them to talk to me.
Good luck
they
with would, that.
They wouldn't talk to me. So ultimately, I learned that Jeffrey Epstein was pleading to some state charges that I was told had nothing to do with my client, and he did do that.
You were misled, more than just told that. You were misled throughout the entire prosecution. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. And my problem with this is, from somebody who only represents, or 90% of my practice is representing crime victims, most of my clients were either shot or stabbed or sexually assaulted. And in order to effectively do that, I work with prosecutors and on their side, U.S. Attorney's Office as well, in almost every one of my cases. So I never wanted to take a position adverse to them, but in this case, I had really no choice. So I looked at the statute, the Crime Victims' Rights Act, and said, wait, they have to be telling you what's going on.
That's
they,
the whole heart of it, isn't
yeah,
it?
You have to at least treat them with fairness. I mean, this is somebody who didn't ask to be a part of the system. All she wants to know is what's going on. Just treat me fair. Treat
absolute,
me at least as well as you're treating the defendant.
Right to know that. Right.
Exactly. So we filed this case, and we filed it as an emergency petition to enforce her victim's rights.
In federal court.
And it was only then at the first hearing that the judge gave us within 5 days that the clients learned for the first time that it wasn't that a plea deal was imminent, which is what we believed. It was that the government had signed an immunity deal with Jeffrey Epstein 9 months prior.
Already done.
Yeah, so for the last 9 months, they were thinking that there was an investigation. They were thinking that something was happening, and really it was a wrapped-up done deal for 9 months. That was what was really offensive.
And they were hoping a guy like you wouldn't come along and question it.
Well, and what we've discovered in discovery with all of the email correspondence between Jeffrey Epstein's attorneys and the government, it made it very clear that there was a real concerted effort to keep this very secret.
So tell the listening audience, what is the remedy, the prospective remedy now that you're seeking or would do justice if there's such a thing at this late stage? If they revoke the plea, they can re-extend the plea. So what's the point other than principle?
Well,
not that that's not enough.
Or can you just talk generally about what are the rights of a victim under the act?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you have a right to be noticed of any hearing, which these girls, all 35 of them, didn't get any notice.
My God.
You have a right to confer with the prosecutor on the case. It doesn't mean you have a right to dictate what they do. They have prosecutorial discretion. But you should have some input. There should be somebody asking, what do you want to have happen?
This wasn't a routine thing. This was specially going on with this particular defendant, which makes it even more aggravating. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he basically ran a pyramid scheme of underage girls over to the house.
But they weren't neglecting other victims' rights in other cases of sexual assault or whatever it was, the feds. They were letting the victims in on the status of the cases ongoing, right?
Absolutely.
So he was clearly getting being treated inappropriately by the government.
He was being treated in a way that would tell others that if you're a billionaire, you get treated one way, and if you're everybody else, you get treated in a different way. I mean,
and if you can implicate your co-conspirators, thus meaning the government agents, theoretically, I'm being careful what I say, then they're going to be treated with even more deference.
Theoretically.
Right. But, you know, if these people would have been at Boomers in the parking lot, it would have been
a lot
safer.
Back to the parking lot thing. Back to the freaking
No, but, I mean, so how do you – I mean, it's great that there's a Victim Rights Act, but how can you stop this from happening again? Not you personally, but us.
I think that one thing that we've done with this case is we've really shed a lot of light on the fact that this act even exists. Now we're getting to a point where people recognize that it exists, but what teeth does it have?
Yeah.
Because the point that Gary just made, which is, okay, so now what? So what that their rights were violated? What do you really want? And so what we've really said, I mean, we've asked for a bunch of things, but what we've really said ultimately is, hey, if there was a deal that was worked out between criminal defendant and the government, but in violation of the rights of others,
it's
avoidable. It's an improper deal that should be invalidated.
But the problem is,
if you invalidate it, the prosecutors could very well sit down.
Re-extend it.
They could sit down with all 40 victims, or if there's more victims, sit down with all of them, say, what do you want to have happen? They give him every victim says, oh, I want him to go to jail. And they say, okay, he's not going to jail. We're going to enter into this non-prosecution agreement all over again. It can happen.
Which makes the whole statute illusory.
It does. So they have these rights. But
illusory. I like that.
They have these rights, but the enforceability of them is still somewhat questionable.
But what I think, Red, is interesting, in the law, there's so many laws out there that create this requirement, and there's no teeth. Like, even in my practice area, you know, real estate and business law, you know, if you don't do, for example, you don't hold your elections in your condominium association when you're supposed to, you broke the law. Now what?
No harm,
no
foul.
And there's so many things like that in there, and it's frightening to me as, you know, someone who doesn't get involved with the criminals you folks did and used to.
Yeah, us folks.
No, it's frightening to me that there's these same type of unenforceable laws and loopholes out there in that world where we're expecting the system as citizens to keep us safe.
Double standard.
Easy for you guys. I know we've got a break in a second, but it's easy for you guys. You're in the system. You know its failings. But for us, you know, the regular citizens hoping to be protected by the system, that scares the crap out of me. And on that, we actually have to take a break.
Yeah, take us off to the break.
And we'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Today's broadcast is brought to you in part by Corporate Capital Direct. Listen, banks are not lending, and the online lenders may not tell you all you need to hear to make the right decision for your company needs. Get the inside edge for business financing. Whether you have capital needs for inventory, payroll, general operating expenses, or even to consolidate expensive debt or tax issues, Corporate Capital Direct can help you avoid common mistakes when seeking a capital solution for your business. Never upfront fees. Get the inside edge for your business financing needs. Call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com. Again, call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com.
Welcome back to Legal News and Review. Recipient of the Award of Excellence from the Florida Bar, featuring Michael Santucci of the law firm Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Reach them at 500law.com or 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go online to belegalbuzz.com. Once again, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
Legal News and Review is back on the air. I'm Philip Bell, the moderator, and we're speaking with Brad Edwards. Brad Edwards, before entering private practice, was lead trial attorney at the Broward County State's Attorney's Office, and he's one of the featured if you will, authors of an article, Crime Victims' Rights During Criminal Investigations. And also recently in the news has to do about the death penalty in Ohio, where they're actually doing it on a conveyor belt before the end of this month so they could still use the drug that will be prohibited as well. So we may have some time to talk about the death penalty and your opinions, gentlemen. But moving forward, going back to the topic of criminal charges that are filed, and, of course, crime victims' rights.
I wanted to ask Brad something about something I read during the Epstein case that was very intriguing, and I want Brad to expound on it. There was something I read about one of the insiders, a butler for Epstein, who approached you surreptitiously and offered to sell you evidence. Can you tell the audience a little bit about that? I don't think it was too public, but I remember reading about it.
Right. So when we were taking depositions in some of the civil cases, and I think that there were probably about 20 overall civil cases that were filed against Jeffrey Epstein at some point in time, we took the butler's deposition, and during the deposition, he denied having...
He wasn't a target. He was just a witness.
He was not a target, and he was one of the only witnesses who showed up without a lawyer.
Without counsel.
Without counsel. Most employees and former employees showed up not only with counsel, but counsel paid for by Jeffrey Epstein, which made getting any information very difficult. Others even took the fifth, which made getting information impossible.
Can I interrupt just for a second for the sake of the show? So if you're called as a witness in a criminal investigation, forget this one. Should you lawyer up? I mean, if you're just a witness, you didn't do anything wrong.
There's no harm to having a lawyer there if you can afford it. It's usually not necessary. It's sometimes obstructive. And it oftentimes requires you to come back for a second deposition.
But legally obstructive.
Yeah,
but
right.
I want you to finish
where we were. Always curious about that.
Yeah. So after the deposition, during the deposition, we asked him, hey, did you have any evidence that you pulled from your employment there that would have been beneficial? And he said no. After the deposition.
Beneficial
in proving
the case. Or disproving it?
This is a butler who knew that underage girls had been to the house. And so this is why we thought, hey, he has something to tell us. So after the deposition, he calls and says, look, I have what I will refer to as the Holy Grail. And it's really the Rolodex that I took, a 97-page Rolodex that I took from one of Epstein's computers in his house.
That was never seized by the feds.
It was never seized, and a grand jury subpoena was served on him to seize it.
And he obstructed.
So I had no choice but to immediately cooperate with the FBI. I became a confidential informant. I guess it's not that confidential anymore.
This is years ago
at this time. I mean, and I don't think that it's any secret anymore.
They wired you for sound?
They did. And I, all along, I thought he was such a good guy. This is one of the only people that cooperated. I tried to talk him out of it while I was on the sound. I said, look, Alfredo, you don't want to do this. You're not a criminal.
You're conspiring.
I'm not a criminal. Yes, you're conspiring. And he ultimately killed himself on the tape. I felt
how
terrible.
How much did he want?
$50,000.
He was selling out for $50,000.
But he killed
grand.
Himself on the tape?
He killed him, yeah, right, because I'm talking to him on the tape trying to tell him, you don't want to do this. And he says something along the lines of, look, I know that it's a crime.
He didn't literally kill him.
No, he just
he killed himself.
I thought you meant like he literally pulled a gun out and blew his head right.
He may as well have.
Gotcha.
Yeah, okay, I mean, okay. It was really bad.
Wish you did then.
So he could have abandoned the conspiracy at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. He could have just given it over. I mean, all we wanted was just give us what
was
subpoenaed.
Why didn't he sell it to Epstein for $500,000? I mean, he was barking up the wrong tree.
So the other side was, hey, this is my insurance policy. I thought that these people could really hurt me. They know that I have this. This is my insurance policy. This is what's keeping me alive. I'm not just going to give it to you. I also treat this as my property now. So I'm not just going to give this to you. I'm selling it to you.
Wow.
Which I tried to convince him over and over again. Don't do this.
What was the evidence? The right what thing. Was it?
It was the black book. Rolodex.
Right. It was the Rolodex.
I mean, that was.
And in the back, it had names of it would say massage and then a place, Florida, the Virgin Islands, New Mexico, wherever the
and,
various
and
houses
probably
were.
A lot of politicians and people in
well,
the government.
Underage people. And then it did, but that doesn't imply that anybody did anything wrong.
Of course
those just
not.
People that knew Jeffrey Epstein.
Right. Very
yeah.
interesting.
Yeah, so that was an interesting
factor. So they indicted him, and he got more time than Epstein did, didn't
he? Yeah, he actually went to prison.
He went to prison. Epstein got off.
He actually went to prison for, I believe, 5 years. I believe he went to prison
so he
for
did more
five
time
years.
Than Epstein.
Yeah, Epstein basically did no time.
Did he have to keep the 50 grand after he got out?
He never got the 50 grand.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that takedown, but he didn't get money.
Would it have been worth it in your eyes, Gary?
50 grand, 5 years?
I don't think so.
Some days at work, I feel like I use a vacation, but probably not.
Jail is
not that
vacation.
One.
Yeah.
Not that one.
That's
absolutely.
An interesting side note.
I mean, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, no, that story has that
is
that
he
case.
Out?
That case is taking me so many different directions. So he got out of prison and then he died of mesothelioma.
Oh,
a month
he
later,
had a
so.
Lawsuit that he waived Black his lawsuit lung? For mesothelioma.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So as a victim, I mean, the takeaway, because we're going to run out of time here pretty soon, the takeaway is what do they need to know? What can they do?
Right. So. This whole victim movement came about because for a long time, victims were on the sideline, so to speak, not asked to be a part of the criminal case. The state is working on behalf of the state, or the U.S. Attorney's Office is working on behalf of the U.S. Attorney, and the criminal defendant has an attorney. And usually the victim has no attorney. So they have a right to an attorney. A victim has a right to an attorney. They have a right to be notified of any hearing. They have a right to always confer with the prosecutor at every stage of the case and at every stage of the investigation, including before being the case is filed.
Independent of that, can you tell us in general, when is it a good time for a victim to hire counsel and not independent of this particular breach of this requirement that
I thought it was an accuser.
An accuser. That's even better. Depending on what stage of the proceeding, we'll call them accusers.
Right, this isn't his client at this point. So.
Yeah,
right.
So then it can be a victim.
I'm thinking of soliciting victims and representing them, to be honest. So what's your take on that? What's another good reason to have victims represented other than a civil cause of action? Let's say there isn't a civil cause of action. What can you do for them?
If there is no civil cause of action, which we've had this before, I'll take them in and – one thing that we do all the time in our office is make sure that they have a cell phone and that they can stay in touch with the prosecutors, because as a prosecutor, losing contact with your victim is one of the worst things that can happen to us. So that's probably not what you want to hear.
No. I'm out. I'm out of that business.
Out. But also, I have, especially with sexual assault victims, I've attended the deposition with them. They have a right to have counsel in there. And especially if it's a child, it's good to have not only a victim advocate in there, but somebody else, some counsel that's going to represent their rights.
Now, Brad Edwards, you're a former lead trial attorney with the Broward County State's Attorney's Office, and you handle cases like that as a prosecutor for quite some time. Your record's phenomenal. I looked you up, seriously. But now you're in private practice, and coming this Friday, you're going to be talking about wrongful death and negligent security and issues that surround it. And you're currently with a fantastic firm. What's the name of your firm?
Farmer Jaffe Weising, Edwards, Fistos, and Lehrman.
We definitely want to invite you to come back when we have topics of this nature.
Well, Phil, you know, I got to say, you know, we don't have a lot of guests on the show who were former prosecutors. And while I really do recognize the importance of people like Ariostro in protecting accused people's rights, it's really good to hear from someone who was a prosecutor and helped keep us safe. I know you're a very quality civil attorney now, but really thank you for
board
doing
certified.
That for all of us. Because I personally, I don't think I could have stomached it. And just the fact that you were able to and do some good, I think, is very impressive.
Yeah, I appreciate
thank
it. Thank you,
Gary.
And
on that note, everyone out there,
be legal!
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, featuring Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Priori, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. They can be reached at 500law.com or at 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for legal news and review. Remember, be legal.
Today's broadcast is brought to you in part by Corporate Capital Direct. Listen, banks are not lending, and the online lenders may not tell you all you need to hear to make the right decision for your company needs. Get the inside edge for business financing. Whether you have capital needs for inventory, payroll, general operating expenses, or even to consolidate expensive debt or tax issues, Corporate Capital Direct can help you avoid common mistakes when seeking a capital solution for your business. Never upfront fees. Get the inside edge for your business financing needs. Call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com. Again, call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or go to corpcapdirect.com.